We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Brandon Green, who is one third of the Left Wingers podcast, and who is standing to be elected to the Young Fabians Executive. And that's what we're going to be discussing today, his campaign to be elected for the Young Fabians Executive. Welcome to the podcast, Brandon.
Hi, Will. Thank you so much for having me on. I love the Debate podcast. It's quite strange to actually be on the other side of the podcast world and actually being interviewed. It's cool.
Yes. No. I know you're feeling it can be quite weird. And we at Debated are great fans of Left Wingers as well. It's an excellent podcast. If you haven't checked it out, make sure that you do. So the first question that I'd like to ask is, what made you decide to start the campaign that you're having at the moment to be elected to the Young Fabians Executive?
I think it's about being passionate about people in the Young Fabians and wanting to get the best out of them possible. I've got a lot of experience with now networking with people inside the Young Fabians, and I know what people come to expect of the society. So I feel like I'm in a good position to actually try and lead that going into the future. I've got a lot of ideas about how it can be changed, because this current executive have done a brilliant job at managing the Young Fabians throughout the pandemic. It's been a really tricky job, as for anybody with experience leading an organisation through these times. But I feel like I have something to offer to the society. And why not now? Why not go for it now?
Absolutely, why not now? For those who aren't familiar with the Young Fabians, could you give a basic potted account of what the Young Fabians are and their relationship to the Fabian Society?
Well, the Young Fabians are the youth wing of the wider Fabian Society. It has its own executive committee, what I'm running for. But apart from that, it's basically just everything that the main Fabian Society is doing, but with young people. It's under 31s, I believe. Could be wrong, but I think it's under 31s. And the Fabian Society is just a society for left-wing political nerds. That's the long and short of it. There's a massive focus on policy. We're committed to gradual, but at the same time, quite radical change. And the society actually came out of kind of being the intellectual wing of the Labour movement. And it's kind of still is that today, but its focus is more on policy and creating ideas that the main party can either choose to take or not.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned one of the things that you want to do is to implement some changes to the Young Fabians. And I know one of the things that you're particularly passionate about is giving the regional groups more support and, making sure that people know that the regional groups are out there. Why do you think it's important to give that kind of support and give that kind of recognition to the Young Fabians regional groups?
Well, one of my aims is to actually decentralise the Young Fabians, because at the moment it's a very, very, very London-centric organisation. There's a lot of talented people in London, and I'm not going to take away from them by saying that, because there are a lot of talented people in the Fabians around the area. But there's also talented Fabians in the rest of the country that I think, get a bit of a raw deal in that we don't necessarily have the bigger events. We don't necessarily get the support that we need to grow. I'm from Barnsley. I'm living in Sheffield, and I'm sat on the Yorkshire and Humber Young Fabians exec. And our experience through that has been that the executive committee have always been supportive, but there's not necessarily a dedicated role to managing the regional groups on the executive committee. So that's something that I'd like to change. Most of the time you have to go to the chair to ask for support. But the chair is a very busy person, whoever they are. And it'd be nice to actually have somebody who's dedicated in their role to managing these regional groups. And apart from that, also sharing best practice between the various regional groups, because that's the only way that you can really grow these organisations. Because I've had somebody say to me that the Fabians is a very DIY, do-it-yourself kind of organisation. And you are in charge of setting up these structures as a Young Fabians member in the way that you want to see them made. And I think the way that we can give more people support in doing that is by sharing those good ideas that we've had in the various regional groups and trying to get members engaged who haven't been engaged before.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the Yorkshire and Humber regional group there. And of course, we've had George Fairhurst on the podcast quite a few times in the first appearance discussing that group. For people who are perhaps not aware as to what regional groups, regional networks get up to, could you give us sort of like an idea as to how different or similar the regional networks are to the main Young Fabians and what kind of things that they hope to achieve within their particular regions?
Well, it's about getting members involved, members engaged and feeling empowered and that they can actually make change within the Fabian society. So in our regional network, a lot of what we do is just about planning socials and actually getting people involved and allowing them to network and find new friends. That's a big part of what being part of the Fabian Society is about, but also putting on events with local political leaders and business leaders. So then you've got more kind of a localized look on politics at the moment and on policy, because the national organization does a great job at actually creating pamphlets and creating policy documents and ideas about policy. But it's actually quite interesting to look at how that's applied at a local level. And that's something that regional groups can do, which the national organization just can't, but doesn't have the kind of localized knowledge of what's needed.
Do you think that it's important, as you mentioned the socials there, organizing the socials, that you make sure that with the socials, there is a mix between in-person events and online events, because of course, because of the pandemic, a lot of people haven't been going to in-person events because obviously through different parts of the pandemic, not been allowed, etc. And obviously people who have perhaps immunocompromised systems won't be wanting to go to in-person events until things are a bit more settled and even more of the population has been vaccinated. Is that something that you think should continue further into the future, a sort of 50-50 split on in-person and online events? Or do you see there as being a particular time limit on how long you want to have online events continuing in such a major role as part of social events and different events?
Well, absolutely. I'm completely in favour of having hybrid kind of in-person virtual events in the future, because a lot of people have attended the Fabian's online events for the first time even, because it's given them the opportunity to get involved where they don't necessarily have to get to a location, because obviously you have different accessibility needs for attending events, and also cost is a big factor in it. It's quite expensive to be traveling around the country and going to various little events here and there. But what I'd like to see is that it's a little bit more difficult for socials, because conversations are a bit more dynamic than you get in a kind of conference or panel event. But where there are those panel events and we have guest speakers, I think there's absolutely no reason to not actually stream them online, so that other young Fabians who can't be there on the day can actually get involved in that way. And if we can make them as dynamic as possible and allow Fabians who can't attend to, for example, ask questions, get involved in the discussion, that's what I'd really like to see, because it'd be a shame to lose all the people who the young Fabians have managed to engage throughout the pandemic because of the move back to in-person events and socials. We have actually seen a drop-off of members who would normally be engaged in-person times, but it'd be nice to have both lots of members engaged. That's the ideal.
And one of the other things that you're running on and that you want to make a part of your campaign, a central part of your campaign, is promoting positive stories related to Fabian membership, to Young Fabian members. What sort of positive stories do you have in mind? What do you mean by promoting positive stories?
Well, one of the things about the Fabian Society is that a lot of people just don't know what it is. I didn't really know very much about it before I started getting involved. I didn't know what it did, what its place was in the wider Labour Party, what events they put on, what the benefits would be to me as being a member. And I joined the Fabians actually by talking to other people who were Fabians. We had Adam Olnut, who was the chair of the Young Fabians at the time, come onto the Left Wingers podcast. And he put an excellent case forward for joining the Fabians. And he talked about all the kind of soft skills that you build by being part of the organisation. So for me, a lot of the skills that I've built are in communication, in confidence in particular. I wasn't really aware of how to kind of grapple policy or how to read policy and be critical of it. And that's something that I think I've got a lot better at through being part of the Fabians. And also actually writing skills. It's quite daunting to try and write a blog post for the first time, but you've got such a great support network around you to kind of encourage you and show you the ropes, if you like, of writing. And that can make a big change in how you feel about kind of being able to formulate policy and how you articulate your ideas. And also the kind of social element of it. It's been brilliant meeting so many new, fascinating and ambitious young people who they may not necessarily know what they want out of life yet, but they've got all the skills there to take them wherever they need to go. It is about building that confidence and giving you those skills so then you can do whatever you want going into the future. I mean, not everybody who's a Fabian will go into politics. Not everybody will be part of the civil service. You can go into all different kinds of walks of life, but it does give you those skills that I don't think the education system gives you enough of. And that's kind of the benefit of it to me personally, as well as actually being part of a bigger kind of policy program and talking about the exciting radical things that we could do in the future as the Labour Party.
Yeah, and you mentioned policy there, and you mentioned it throughout the podcast because it is something that is vitally important to the Fabians, the young Fabians, the formulation of policy, the discussion of policy. And do you think that there are certain policies, certain pamphlets that you've read recently that you would particularly like to promote on the Young Fabians executive, some sort of like ideas that you think perhaps have been in a policy paper or perhaps they've been in a blog post that have got a certain amount of attention, but you'd like to give them even more attention to sort of like push them even further with the role on the executive?
Yeah, so actually I've used Fabian's policy papers before in my assignments at uni. That's how much kind of weight I give to them. I think they're absolutely fascinating. It's just kind of bodies of information. And there is a lot of opinion in there, but that's okay. Because, you know, you need those different perspectives that go into the pamphlets to actually make it worthwhile reading. I used the most recent one that I've actually used in a uni assignment. It's one that hasn't actually, it's not actually that recent, but it's about the future of trade unions and kind of looking at the modern challenges that trade unions face and how we can go into the future and grow them as separate to the rest of the Labour Party and the rest of the Labour movement. And that was absolutely fascinating to read because some of the ideas that were getting put forward, I not even considered. And that's the thing, when you go into these pamphlets and you look at them, there's always ideas in there that surprise you. You'd never considered them before. They make you think, they make you question the status quo. And I think that's what it's all about, really. It's about kind of getting people to question the current policies of the government or the Labour Party at the time and asking how we can make them better so then they work for the people that we're meant to represent.
Absolutely. Now, I'd just like to turn to the Left Wingers podcast because I mentioned it at the start of the discussion with your good self. And of course, it is an excellent podcast. It's one that I highly recommend you checking out if you enjoy debated or you enjoy any political podcast. It's well worth listening to. But I'd just like to ask, what was it that made you and the other people involved decide to start the Left Wingers podcast? What sort of like prompted you to come up with the idea of it and to put it into action?
Well, to be honest, I stole the idea. It was a podcast originally run by Lauren, who's who's part of the Criminal Justice Network in the Young Fabians, and somebody else that she knew. And there's a little bit of friction there, but I saw how great the idea was of having a podcast that was just dedicated to talking about left-wing ideas. And so I came on board with my friend Ross, who's from Scotland. Mm-hmm. We joined Lauren and we changed up the name. It used to be called Chaos With, inspired by Ed Miliband. We changed the name to the Left Wingers because that's what we are. We're Left Wing Wingers. But to say that, I think we've covered some pretty important topics in, I hope, a sensitive way. Mm-hmm. And we've noticed that there's not enough platforms, media platforms, mm-hmm. for young people to access that kind of explain the ins and outs of politics, mm. and look at it from a left-wing perspective. The media is just so dominated by right-wing mm. opinion, yeah. and we want to kind of show a bit of opposition to that. We don't claim to be unbiased in any way, shape or form. We're very, very biased, but you know, we're unashamedly so. We're not just kind of a Labour Party podcast, although mm-hmm. that is the majority of the guests that we get on. Mm-hmm. You know, we get people from other different parts of the political world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we are unashamedly left wing.
Well, it would be it'd seem a bit of a unhonest description if, you know, given you left wing, just you weren't left wing. So it works in your favour, I think. And of course, you mentioned Lauren there, and Lauren has been someone who has come on debating. Is it again another friend of the debated podcast? I just wonder, you mentioned obviously different topics that you've tackled, some of them sensitive topics. Has there been anything in particular that when you've been recording an episode, perhaps on a particular topic or even just speaking to a particular guest, where you really felt that you've learned something that prior to the podcast you didn't know, or that has changed your opinion of a particular subject?
Yeah, so we had, I think the episode that has kind of changed my perspective the most, because it's just an area of life that I don't know very much about. And mm. We had some guests on from GRT Racism, mm. and the atheists have a different name, but I think they're called GRT Socialists now. Mm-hmm. And they came on to talk about the experience of Gypsy Roma traveller people, mm-hmm. And kind of the discrimination that they face, mm-hmm. in education, in public services, in just life in general. And some of the things that they were saying were really revealing to me, because I'd never seen or heard that perspective before. You know, a lot of the media is very hostile to this group in society for no reason. It's just basic bigotry. Mm-hmm. And it's so great having people come on and kind of tell that different perspective, mm-hmm. and share their life experiences. And that's one of the things that I think I've really loved about doing the podcast, kind of gathering together these personal experiences of people, sharing different perspectives that most people aren't exposed to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an amazing episode. Mm.
Do you think then that, because I mean, you mentioned the sort of like the dominance of the right and of a particular political opinion in the media. Do you think that podcasts like Left Wingers and other media platforms are changing the way that people consume news and consume politics? And do you think that that's something that is going to have a knock-on effect in the future, that as more podcasts and more platforms that are perhaps not as allied to the more established media outlets emerge, that people's perspectives and the way that they understand politics is going to change, and it is going to be a permanent shift?
Yeah. Well, podcasting as a kind of way to get across information is really great, because you're straight into someone's ear. They can be cooking, they can be jogging, they can be procrastinating from work, and you're there, you're chatting away to them about whatever you feel is important. Yeah. At the time, it is a fantastic kind of medium of how we can communicate with each other, and I do think that it poses a challenge to kind of traditional media forms, because it's not round the clock coverage by the news. Yeah. It's very kind of, it captures a moment, I think, better than other kind of media channels. And also it's a great way to actually have quite lengthy discussions about things that matter to the listeners, because you have to try and find podcasts most of the time. You have to be looking for them to actually come across them. So the people who actually click on your podcast are generally quite engaged with what you're doing it about anyway. And it's about kind of it's about harnessing that engagement and having those interactions with your audience, because that's one thing that I think newspapers and television and even to an extent kind of talk shows don't do, the kind of engagement aspect and being able to have that two-way conversation. So a lot of the guests that we've had on are people who used to listen to us and found our content interesting mm-hmm. and thought that they had something to contribute to it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we build up our our pool of guests. And I do think it poses a challenge, because unlike before, where all the information is coming from a few rich billionaires who mm-hmm. will have a very set agenda, mm-hmm. now everybody can broadcast their own opinions and have their own biases. And mm-hmm. you can really shop around and see what political persuasion kind of persuades you. Mm-hmm. I think one of the good things about our podcast is that we're not of the same opinion. Mm-hmm. We're all left-wing, but we're not of the same opinion on a lot of political issues. And that creates healthy discussion mm. that I think is lacking on a lot of media channels. I watch GMB in the morning sometimes, mm-hmm. and the kind of panel debates that they're having are not at all constructive. there's a lot of aggression. There's a lack of understanding between the mm. people who are talking to one another.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a podcast gives you the opportunity to escape from, because you can listen to people talking about current news events, mm-hmm. but they're not angry with each other. Mm. They're not having a debate. They're having a discussion.
Yeah.
And I think you can take more away from that.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the future of left-wingers? Do you have a sort of like a secret 5-year plan that you've got stashed away somewhere? Or
I mean, I wish that we were that organized. That'd be brilliant. No, I think the most exciting thing that we've got coming up, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this because I haven't asked my other presenters, but it was Kathleen's idea. So Kathleen's a new presenter that we've had on. I say new, she's been with us nearly a year now, but it feels like it's quite new still. Mm-hmm. Her idea was that we should go to conference
mm-hmm.
and we should chat to people there, basically. Yeah. What a radical idea. And so at conference, we're going to be doing daily updates about what's happening,
mm-hmm.
what the kind of big issues of the day are,
mm-hmm.
what people think about what's going on. Things will move fast. We'll probably have to do this in between drinking and mixing. But I think it's going to be enjoyable. It's going to be fun. And yeah. I hope that people will appreciate how much fun we're having and have fun on our Flavor Conference journey too.
Do you think that's something that perhaps will be an interesting window that perhaps people don't always get to see some of the inner workings of the Labour Party conference? Because quite often, if people aren't actually there, the kind of exposure that they'll get is they might see, say, the leader's speech reported on the news, or they might see other prominent figure speeches reported on the news. But generally, they won't get the same kind of like feeling for the conference that perhaps when you're doing your different chats to people there that they will. Do you think that will open people's eyes perhaps as to what exactly the Labour Party's conference is like for those who haven't been?
I hope so. I mean, I haven't been to the Labour Party conference before, so mm. everything will be a new experience to me, and I hope I can bring that to the podcast and kind of have the newbies guide on what's happening at conference, because it does feel a little bit kind of alien and like its own isolated thing. You occasionally hear stories, most of the time negative, on the grapevine about what happens at Labour conference. So I hope that we can kind of paint a positive picture of people, you know, having a good time, socialising, talking about the big ideas of the day and the Labour Party's future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Just have to quickly turn to one of the big issues that has dominated the news in recent days has been the proposed and now voted on and going to be implemented rise in national insurance contributions. Now, the Labour Party is opposed to that, as they believe that as a means of paying for social care, that it will obviously hit working people more than those perhaps who could afford to pay a greater contribution of tax, i.e. those who have got a higher income bracket than those who obviously pay national insurance, who are contributions who are generally on the lower scale of income. What are your thoughts on the raising of national insurance? Do you think that it's a necessary thing to pay for social care, or do you think it's just going to hit working people and not really going to pay for social care in a meaningful way?
Well, I don't think that anybody would be in any doubt that social care does need reform.
Yeah.
The system isn't fit for purpose. You know, you'd like to think that society's most vulnerable are getting looked after to at the highest quality available.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that a lot of workers in social care are incredibly overstretched. Mm. They're incredibly hardworking,
yeah.
But they just don't have the support and the numbers that they need, basically. Mm. There's a complete lack of funding for services, which, you know, the national insurance contributions is meant to kind of try and fix.
Yeah.
And there's a lack of mental health support in particular, because it is a challenging job. It's a job that takes a big mental and physical toll, and there needs to be more support for social care workers in that aspect. And we really need to try and drive up the quality of the provision of social care services, because, like I say, these are society's most vulnerable, and we want them to be looked after to the best kind of standard that we can.
Yeah.
That being said, financing through national insurance is a choice and not a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they've gone for a regressive tax first as a way to pay for our social care services, I think, is disgraceful, especially considering the kind of wastage that the government had through the pandemic with the failed test and trace app, those dodgy contracts that they've been handing out, the cutting of stamp duty on second home owners, super tax deductions. It's all about taking the costs away from those who can bear the cost, and placing it on working people who don't have the same kind of money and can't stretch money as far, especially alongside the universal credit cut. It's attacking people from both ends, attacking their income from both ends and making working people poorer for it. I don't really understand why the government has done this. I do, because they've obviously got donors who they don't want to annoy, and the party proper who they've got to keep on side. But I think it's disgraceful. And the fact that landlords can be paying nothing extra because of this increase in national insurance, yet the people who are living in their properties, who are working hard day to day, will be paying significantly more. It's a disgrace, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just been a very depressing watch on the news, and a very depressing read in the newspapers. But I don't think it's going to go down particularly well, and maybe. I doubt it, because they've rushed the policy through so quickly. So it seems like they're pretty intent on this as being their policy of how they're going to fund social care. But we can always hold out and hope for a U-turn, because our government's great at doing that.
Yeah, they absolutely are. We're coming towards the end of the podcast, Brandon. It's been great speaking to you. And I have one final question. Now, of course, we touched upon left-wingers, and we've discussed it to a certain extent. But one thing that I'd be interested to know is, if you could have three guests, whether they be living or alive, from the history of the Labour Party, to have on future editions of the Left Wingers podcast, what three guests would you pick? You can pick anyone, living or alive.
Oh gosh, you're going to have to give me a minute. let me think. I think I would definitely love to have on Clement Attlee.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's a Labour figure that I respect so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the policies they pursued were policies of the time.
Mm.
And, you know, Labour members today would look down upon them.
Yeah.
Particularly the way that it's kind of international policy towards India and partition in India, a lot of Labour Party members would look down upon. So it'd be nice to see kind of the reasoning behind the government's policies towards that particular aspect of history.
Mm.
But also kind of He's such an unusual character because he was very, very introverted. Mm. But it'd be nice to kind of see if you could get any any juicy stories out of him, I suppose.
Yeah.
Kind of open him up and hear more about how he justifies the way that he pursues his politics. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be very interesting. Another one, let's have a think. Somebody who we've actually contacted to be on the Left Wingers podcast before, Betty Boothroyd. Fabulous speaker.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk to my family about politics, they always say, oh, she was the best speaker. Mm. And I would just love to see her kind of hear her account of events while she was speaker and kind of hear her reflections on her time in politics and any advice that she has for young people looking to get into politics. That'd be really interesting. I'm going to go current now. It would be very interesting to... Well, we've got a segment on our podcast called Care Watch, mm-hmm. where we kind of have a deep dive into what our leader, Keir Starmer, is doing. We talk about kind of the issues of the day and how he's responding to them and everything, which is sometimes good, sometimes bad, and sometimes we disagree on whether he's doing stuff well. And it'd be really interesting to hear about his plans for the party and kind of... It's not an experience, it's not a side of him that I think he would show, mm-hmm. but it'd be interesting to ask him, maybe when the podcast is turned off, what his actual thoughts are about his current situation as leader. I think that'd be fascinating. And actually, it's a shame, but a lot of the best conversations that we have on the podcast are when the recording button stops and the truth comes out.
Oh, no, I know absolutely how you feel with that. On that point, three absolutely fantastic picks, and hopefully at least two of them will appear on Left Wingers very soon. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast, Brandon. If people want to find out more about you, about your campaign for the Young Fabians Executive, about Left Wingers, where should they go?
So we're everywhere, basically. We've got, if you're after the Left Wingers, we've got a Twitter account, left_Wingers. We're also on Facebook. I think our tag on that is just Left Wingers Podcast. Or you can email us at leftwingerspodcast@gmail.com. In terms of my campaign, I am at BrandonJ_2001 on Twitter. And that's where all of my campaigning will take place. We're encouraged not to campaign too much in this election because, you know, we want everybody to be given a fighting chance based off of the kind of promises that they've made. Mm-hmm. But anything that I do post about the campaign and the election will be on my Twitter account.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely fantastic. Well, thank you once again for coming on the podcast, Brandon. It's been a real delight.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.